All right, Jonathan. Since you're cheap, I have a few cheap advertising ideas under $50 for your business.
You think I'm cheap?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm cheap.
Oh, you're totally cheap.
I am?
Yeah.
I'd be interested to hear that.
But before I give you these cheap advertising ideas under $50, let's fire up the podcast.
Let's do it.
Welcome to episode 22 of the Common Sense Show. I'm Micah.
I am Jonathan.
I am Groot.
So about this proper I am? And we're just two common guys with business sense.
I like throwing you off.
Thank you. Where can people find us on Facebook?
Facebook.com/TheCommonSensePodcast.
Instagram.
At The Common Sense Podcast.
Twitter.
At Sense Podcast.
And where can people send email for us?
info@thecommonsensepodcast.com.
Don't forget to subscribe, folks.
Yes. Instagram is not one of them, but Spotify is, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, and Player FM.
That's right. We're in a few other places, but
Are a couple.
It's all good.
You get the point.
Those are just a few.
Yeah.
Well, it's time for our this show's Fantastic Failures. All right, man. Well, you have an interesting Fantastic Failure for us.
That's right.
Well-known company.
Well-known. It's Government Motors.
I'm Groot.
Government.
I mean, General Motors.
Did you really write oops there?
I did.
That's so corny.
Yeah.
Oops, I meant General Motors.
So... General Motors, well, everybody knows that. I don't think they need much of an introduction. But we're interested because General Motors went from just being this powerhouse company most of the century to needing to be bailed out. Like, what happened? You know, for years, people believed that it was way too big to ever go away. Investors, you know, had a lot of confidence in the company. They even had employees that invested their life savings into the company. But in 2009, company declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So there are a number of factors that led to GM becoming one of the largest auto manufacturers in the world. I think we should talk about that for a second because I think it also shares some light on why they failed. And so one of the number one things I thought was really interesting is they offered lines of credit to consumers in the 20s. Mm-hmm. And this is back at a time where Henry Ford was morally opposed to offering credit to customers. Henry Ford sounds like a jerk. It's like, you ever heard that line where, like, if you wanted the Model T in a different color, He's like, hey, you can have the Model T in any color you want, as long as it's black. Like, oh, okay, jerk.
Which is ironic.
I'll just go to GM and lease a brand new, whatever they had in the 20s, In blue, just to piss you off. So, they did that. I thought that was cool. Another thing that they did that, I guess, a little controversial is... They had a big involvement in World War II. So They were really instrumental in the war. So the UK division, they build tanks, but then they also profited by doing contracts with Germany, even after Hitler declared war against the US. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whether right or wrong, their involvement in the war was lucrative for them, and they continued to grow. And then lastly, their introduction of popular models in the post-war era. So such... cars as like the Oldsmobile Cutlass, things like that became huge in the 60s and 70s. And so it made GM this powerhouse Back then. But then there's also reasons why they failed. And so as of late, they had an unsuccessful line of automobiles. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, old school cars, but I think even some of the newer ones too, like they just put out some really bland cars. Like you, like if you think of like one bad GM car, you might think of like a Chevette or a Nova or something.
Yes, begin with.
Yeah. But I mean, like
even a few womps.
Even recently, it's like up until like the bailout, like a lot of cars are just very bland. It was just a car, you know? Another big reason was their payment to retired workers. So one of the things that made GM such a great place to work for actually started to hurt them eventually. You know, when business was good, they were, you know, people were like, oh man, you know, they're so generous and everything. But over time, they couldn't keep up with all these pensions that they were paying out.
Surprise.
Yeah. And of course, the investors aren't happy with this. And so something had to get done with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, we kind of brought out loss of innovation and shoddy management.
Yep.
So the innovative spirit was the driving force behind GM's success over the century. But then when new management came into the picture, it ended up turning into, like, this bureaucratic mess. Like, they're more focused on the numbers versus actual real quality of the product. That's really what made them popular in the first place.
Mm.
You know? And yep. Then...
you know, in Leaders Eat Last, that book... that I just finished, by the way. I finally finished, yeah. By the way.
Is that a good book?
It is. Excellent book. Simon Sinek. It talks about that the companies who have the hardest time growing and have the worst culture typically have number-driven leaders who are trying to appease stockholders. Mm. So I'm not surprised that, you know, focusing only on the stockholders would plummet, like, in some ways or affect the GM's business, you know? I mean, not saying that your company has to be completely people-centric, but, you know, your priorities kind of get out of whack when you start focusing on profits over people.
Yeah.
Usually.
No, you're right. Speaking of talking to people, Simon Sinek is a beast at, like, public speaking.
Yeah.
Like, I
heard a couple of his TED Talks. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he just has a really captivating way of, like, speaking. Like, I was listening to one speech that he gave where... he was giving, like, these tips. I didn't even know it was Simon Sinek when he was talking until afterwards. I was like, oh, wow. Like, that's him. So I knew the name, but I didn't have a face with the name.
Right.
But, yeah, he's a very, very good speaker. So another thing that they did that was stupid is they emphasized on big gas guzzlers. And so, like, again, kind of focusing on their bottom line, they were like, well, we make a way more margin on gas guzzlers than we do, you know, these smaller compact cars. But... around the time in 08, 09, gas prices were, like, skyrocketing
right. Those
years. And they're still focusing on, you know, Suburbans and Tahoes and stuff like that. And it's like people aren't buying those anymore. They wanted to buy more greener, fuel-efficient cars like hybrids. And GM didn't place a lot of emphasis on that line. And then, the other one was competition. They have a clear, did not have a clear plan to respond to the competition from auto manufacturers in Japan and Europe, and that suffered in a lot of market share losses as well. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from it, and I think we could try to, like, maybe break some of it down to, like, how that you know affects people listening.
Yeah. So what did you have in mind?
Well, one thing I really thought of when I think about it is failure to innovate, and just blatantly ignoring competition as a key to their demise. You know, like, you can't just focus on profiting from you know, like, profiting in the moment without looking to the future, because, like, the thing you could be profiting on, like, exactly, like, let's say I brought this up before, but it's like we want to have a little hobby shop and we have fidget spinners, and oh my god, we have all different types of fidget spinners. Fidget spinners are blown up. We're making so much money, we can't even help it. And you know what? I'm going to heavily invest in more fidget spinners, but fidget spinners with lights on them and knives and what, you know, whatever.
So if you don't know what a fidget spinner is, it's like this little five-pointed, it looks like a star kind of thing, where you the middle is fixed and it has ball bearings attached to it, and you can, like, spin it around your fingers. It's for people that have, like, attention issues primarily, but, like, at some point we all kind of stem a little bit, like clicking a pin or do that. So they kind of became a rage actually with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But so maybe the question that people have, though, thinking about this fantastic failure, now that I'm thinking about it, is, okay, so you have a car, right? Or I have a product or service and I'm trying to start a business. How do I innovate something like a car? Because it's a car.
Right. Well,
what thought process goes into innovating as a business owner, a product that has seemingly been on the market for years?
Well, look at changing it. All you have to do is look at Tesla. Tesla hasn't had a profitable month in who knows how long in their mm-hmm. business, but people continue to buy their stocks and their stocks go up and whatever. Maybe not recently, but the point being is people love the company because it breeds innovation. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all they're doing is innovative. And that's what people want to see. Now, whether you think that, you know, electric vehicles are the future and all that stuff, it's a move in the right direction. That's what I say. Like, maybe that's not the future per se. You know, mining lithium has its own issues and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And we still don't know where we're going to put all the old batteries.
The batteries, all the Tesla batteries.
You know, yeah. So
that are saving the world.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, to make those batteries requires, you know, gasoline waste and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of like questions with it, but I think it is a step in the right direction. But it's innovative, you know.
But my thing is like when you're trying to use your brain to figure out how to innovate on something, you have to think. I think you touched on this earlier when you said you have to consider future use. What does the future look like? What does it feel like? How are people going to behave in the future? Are the things that my product or service can interact with that will make the experience better or blend them together? This is why companies acquire other companies. This is why big companies like Microsoft, Apple. Firms like this acquire smaller companies because they realize the value, for instance, in a proprietary product or service that could go along with this service. Now, you may be a small shop and you don't have the means to acquire another business, but thinking about how people interact on a daily basis with what you're selling or providing and changing how they interact is the best way to do it, in my mind, to innovate. That's how you kind of innovate. For instance, 15 years ago, there were no Bluetooth in cars. There were no backup cameras. There were no blind spot mirrors on the side view mirrors. And if they did exist, they only existed in the highest end luxury cars that were on the market. And the quality was, well, great for the day, but now the quality has gotten a lot better. But now what do you see? Well, you see a Ford Focus with blind spot mirrors and Bluetooth. Why? Because people are starting to wrap their minds around the fact that these are safety measures and there's legislation behind in many states about using your cell phone, right? So, okay, so if I can't use a handheld device in the car, I can only use hands-free in the car. I need a car that act, because I'm a salesperson or something, I'm always on the road, I need a car that can accommodate that.
Right.
So forward-thinking car companies will no longer build cars without Bluetooth. It seems kind of insane to me.
Yeah.
And for the amount of money that it seems like it would cost to put Bluetooth in there, it's just not worth losing a customer because your car doesn't have Bluetooth. Now, the question is, if you're trying to innovate a service or product-based business, how do you do that? Well, you have to think about, like, let's say in your case, how are people going to interact with their heat or the air conditioning or their heating and cooling of the house in 15 years into the future?
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I just went to a seminar where this is something we were talking about. Like, what does homeownership look like? Because it's a bigger picture than just one question. You have to look at, like, what does homeownership look like in the next 15 years? What do buying decisions look like? Like, a lot of people that have money right now are baby boomers. Mm-hmm. That's where all the money's at. A lot of new homeowners don't have $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 just in their bank account like older generations do.
Right.
So financing is going to be a really big point. So if you don't have financing, for instance, in my industry, and you go to someone's home, like, yeah, you know, we can replace your HVAC system, it's going to cost $12,000. Mm-hmm. You're not going to do very well.
Right.
But right now you probably could, mm-hmm. you know, but that's going to change 20 years from now, 10, you know, sure. maybe even 10 years from now. So.
Well, that's the other thing too. If you're a service-based business and you're not using automatic tools like online booking services or text message servicing, then you're not innovating. And like, you're at risk because if people have to wait for you to whip out your calendar book that you got for CVS for like $8
right.
and like turn to the page and try to scour your schedule and they don't have access to see
Hold on, let me lick my thumb. And
yeah, like, and just like how I used to take appointments when I, you know what it was, is like, it was kind of like an ego trip for me when I first started training because I like seeing everything written down because it just, my schedule was so full, it made me feel good. But it's not about what makes you feel good. It's about how the customer perceives your business. And like, are you staying ahead and lockstep with what people want? You know, like, for instance, is the future of heating and air conditioning, how I see it, a technology where the HVAC or the system in your home continues to scan the human bodies in the room as opposed to the room itself?
Actually, some of them do that now.
Yeah, and like it matches whatever the It averages out the temperature to make people in the entire house comfortable, and yep. depending on what room they're in. Like, to me, like I didn't even know that existed right now. But, like, and I'm sure it's, like, stupid expensive to have that.
No, but it just came out.
It just came out. So it's probably wonky technology?
It might be, but, yeah, but that's where stuff's going. More smart, automated, self-automated. For instance, one report was showing that a lot more millennials are more... like green conscious, mm-hmm. and they don't want like fossil fuel systems and mm-hmm. things. They're looking for ways to get rid of that. So mm-hmm. in the same realm of millennials really liking EV cars and stuff, there's more heat pump systems that run off electricity that they're more interested in. So right. that's like becoming the future. So mm-hmm. how well are you up on that? Which we are very much up on.
But right.
point being is that's because, you know, we're doing that. We're always looking at like, okay, what's coming?
Yeah.
You know, and how could we be there first? And I think that's what GM didn't do. They didn't look and say, that's great that Suburbans are doing good now, mm-hmm. but like they have the potential to be the Tesla.
Right.
Like they could have been like, hey, listen, we're doing something no one else is. We're mm-hmm. going to drop EV cars. And they kind of did a little bit with the Volt that mm-hmm. had a little bit of success. I don't even think they're continuing that though now.
No. They discontinued it like 2 years ago.
I think.
Well, and that's the thing. It's just like, I feel like, you got to meet the customer sometimes where they are, and then sometimes you have to meet the customer where they will be in the future, and explained why this is like this more than a concept. This is going to be a reality for them in a few years. Like with fitness, you may say, okay, well, it's fitness. Well, they have these things like a mirror at home where a person can come home, look in the mirror, and exercise on this mirror. Like that's cool technology, but I don't think that's the future of fitness. I think the future of fitness is driving customer experience at a facility. Like, on some level, people are still going to have to go to facilities because it doesn't matter how technological we are, we all have human desires. Like we have a need for touch. We have a need for personal interaction. We have a need for all this other stuff. When science has shown that when personal interaction, one-on-one personal interaction goes away, people start to feel more depressed, more isolated, more lonely, that kind of thing. Even with technology abounding, you can still feel like you're in a silo. So what do? Like, that means that the personal interaction, the one-on-one experience or the group dynamic is not gonna just melt away. It means that now, if you want to be the best facility, you got to have the best experience. And how do you control your experience? Well, you control your experience by making it streamlined for people, making it easy for them to get in, the schedule, to be there, to stay, that kind of thing. You make the experience less frustrating for people. Mm. And that will help you become less... of a fantastic failure, move less to a fantastic failure and more to a successful startup.
I was just reading that a lot more millennials are moving away from a traditional membership at a gym mm-hmm. In favor of more boutique gym memberships.
Oh, yeah. The boutique sector of the fitness, health, and wellness industry is growing exponentially.
That's good for you.
It is, but the problem is that the open rate of boutique facilities is double the growth of the people who want these boutique facilities.
There's more places to work out.
Yeah, it's like you have a stomach virus and you're stuffing pizza down your throat. It's like, okay, yeah, you're nourishing yourself, but to what extent? Like you're causing more issues, more harm than good. I do have an interesting way though. GM innovated. Did you know that black people saved GM, saved Cadillac?
No. Oh, see.
Yeah, Cadillac is GM.
That's funny.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know black people saved Cadillac?
No.
So a long time ago, it's true that oftentimes the salespeople would not sell Cadillacs to black people. They thought they couldn't afford them, right? This was, I don't know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, something like that. Between 30s and 50s, I believe. And so what would happen? Well, I mean, where were black people at the time? Well, believe it or not, back then, there was a stronger middle class of black families.
Isn't that sad?
Because
wow.
black people had more intact nuclear families, and there was a stronger middle class of black people back in those days. So there were more black people who could actually afford to buy Cadillacs. So you know what they would do?
Hmm.
Is that they would hire white people to go buy Cadillacs for them. And then they would own the Cadillac because they wouldn't sell it to black people. But what was happening? When the Cadillacs needed service, there were black people that were bringing the Cadillacs to service because they owned them. They just sent the white person to go buy them. They would own the Cadillac. So one of the engineers or service managers for GM at the time this German guy was traveling around, and GM would frequently monitor the service centers, and he noticed that there was a huge population of black people getting their Cadillacs serviced. Initially, he just thought that those Cadillacs belonged to the white owners of the cars, and the black people who were driving them brought the cars in.
Right.
And then he found out that no, the black people actually owned the cars. So he went back to the board of GM. You know what he did? He said, we have to focus on this target market because black people are driving these cars. And so Cadillac actually almost went out of business because their sales were so poor. And in 2 years, GM not only turned the Cadillac division around, it was by far the most successful of all the models that they bought.
That's hilarious.
It's crazy, right? And thus cementing Cadillac as the official car of black people.
Which is true. Any old timer, the white wall Cadillac.
Cadillac. Thought about the Cadillac because it was such a symbol of success back in the day.
But see, that's smart, man. Like, that's what they miss now.
Mm. So what does that tell you about them being a fantastic failure? It's like they've lost their way kind of like with that stuff.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, there's so many other things to pick up from, but, you know, I think, that really just, again, falls back into understanding your target market. Like, even now, like, and I see it even still, like, you know, people are funny when gas prices start to go back down. It's like, oh, I'm going to get back into buying my big, huge house of a car.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like, but then when they go back up, people are going to be looking for, you know, so it's funny to me, but like, I'd even like it if they were like, listen, we're going to like leapfrog EV technology and look into whatever. I don't know what the next hydrogen cell cars, you know, or something like, you know, whatever.
Tell people what EV technology is.
Oh, just electric vehicles. But yeah, like just leapfrog it, figure out a way to be different and better, you know. They are doing some stuff though that I kind of do like. I think it'd be annoying if I own the car, but like the new Trailblazers, I think they're called.
Yeah.
When you go to park and before you leave, there's a light that'll ding.
Mm-hmm.
And the light is telling you to look in the back seat and make sure there's no children in the back seat before you leave. And you actually have to press the button before it'll actually let you take the key out.
Really?
Close the door, yeah.
That is cool.
So they are trying to like do better with like safety and stuff like that. And I do applaud them for that. I actually think, because for some reason, I don't know why, but that's a serious problem right now. People leaving their kids in, you know, closed cars in Florida and stuff, which is like, I can't even imagine that. But
yeah, exactly.
So that is good.
Yeah, so like I think with small business owners, entrepreneurs, I think all, you know, like the story we just told about Cadillac, like the information you brought out, innovation is important. Know that any company can go bankrupt. Any company can be affected by a recession. Jonathan is predicting a recession within the next 12 months. But my whole point is that it goes along with what you said. You have to innovate. You have to know your market. And you have to know your data about who your customers are and, you know, who's actually using your service. You know, you can't just be blind about that, you know. Even if you're a product-based business and you have inventory somewhere, you house inventory, you have to know who, like, not just what is the highest seller in your retail shop, but who are the group that makes up the highest selling product? Is it women?
Yeah.
Is it young women? Is it young white women? Like, is it young Hispanic women? Like, who is it?
Right.
Because then that should affect your marketing. You know, like you market to that specific group, like who are buying your products, you know?
It's so true. So it's smart. And that's what I see now too. Like even GM, they're getting a lot better with their marketing. Like you'll even notice in their marketing, like Chevy, for instance, they'll have, it'll be a focus group that's what the commercial is.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be showing the different trucks and, hey, did you know that this car won JD Power of the Year? Which would you think it'd be? And everybody's like, oh, I think it's a Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, no, it's a Chevy. It's like, wow, I love this thing. I could see myself in it, you know, but they're trying, you know, they're going in a direction, but unfortunately they had to get bailed out first.
Right.
But
in almost every like SUV or pickup truck commercial that GM has now, they almost always show the gas mileage because they're proud of it. Some of it has to do with the governmental mandates that Obama put in place regulating that car companies have to achieve a certain amount of mileage. That's how like, I guess, technically speaking, that's how people, because the government can't necessarily control what is charged at the pump, but they can control the regulations of the fuel efficiency of the cars, so that that kind of makes it, even if you're paying like a higher premium for gas, your car will go longer theoretically because it has more, it gets more miles per gas. But they're like, they always brag about how many miles per gallon they're getting. And then what I'm finding now is that this new generation of people who are shopping for cars almost always look at gas mileage. I don't think many generations before that did.
No, said, I never care.
This gets like, you know, 50 miles at a gallon. Like, now people actually look at that stuff.
Except for my dad. My dad knows to like the 10th decibel. Like, he's like ridiculous with it.
What kind of car does he drive?
He has a Toyota Tacoma,
and
for a car, he has, well, he has three cars. He has a Jeep that probably gets horrible gas mileage.
Oh, yeah.
An 82 CJ Jeep. Toyota Tacoma, I think it's like a 2018, which for a truck, that actually gets decent gas mileage.
Right.
And then for his car, it's a Subaru Impreza. That also, I think it's like a little four-cylinder Impreza or something. That gets, you know.
The turbo?
I don't know. I'm clueless with those cars. But yeah, he's always like, I mean, Jonathan, I get 28.4 miles per gallon.
Like, who cares? Get in, close the door.
Meanwhile, mine, I'm like,
right, exactly.
Like, I don't care.
Right. Yeah. So that's government motors, huh?
Yeah. And like I said, there's other lessons, but I think that's a really good one for us to focus on here, is because it's so true. I'll give you a great little story. I was really hungry one day. And I searched for places to eat, and I found kind of mixed reviews on this one place, but I was starving. So I'm like, what? I don't care. I'm just going to go into it. And the reviews were spot on. They said, you know, the place is good, but they just don't understand what the place is. Like, so I was like, I don't know what that means. And so I went in. Oh, my goodness. They were spot on. In store, a deli, a convenience store, a liquor store. Like, and there was maybe something else, all wrapped in one. Oh, a bakery. So they made baked goods. They had wine and cheese section. They had liquor, another section. They had a convenience store where, like, you could do like small shopping, not like grocery store shopping, but you could buy some stuff. And then a deli, all in the same little shop. And it was like, I agree. I don't know what you do. Like I want to, like, if I want really good wine and cheese, I want to go to a wine and cheese store. I don't want to go to a deli for that.
Right. You know? Yeah.
And vice versa, you know? I'm not going to go to a wine and cheese store for a ham and cheese sandwich. Like, I want to go to a deli for that.
That'd be odd.
Yeah. So it's like, what do you do? Like,
I mean, I can see some pairings. Kind of makes sense to have, like, pairings like wine, cheese, maybe some stuff that go with that people would eat, like olives or something, you know, like,
yeah,
some, you know, nice, like
breads or
Artesian
bread or something,
but like not something, not like Skittles and Doritos.
Yeah, next to it. Like, actually, while I'm here, I could pick up a few things for the house and, you know, buy some Ajax and
Ajax.
Like, what is this place? It's so random.
Hey, pass me the perm over there next to the next to the French artisanal cheese.
Oh, shoot. I did need a funnel to change the oil in my car.
Right? Exactly. That's right. So you have $100 for your wine, $50 for your cheese, and then $17.99 for your power steering fluid. Like, imagine shopping in a place like that.
So that's what I mean. I was like, I said the same thing. I left a review, and I'm like, so my point is, though, is sometimes when we get in business, we're like, we have this seizure about us that's like, we have to be everything to all people, and we have to make everybody happy. And it's like, no, you don't. Like,
you don't.
Don't, you know.
You have to have spheres of things that you sell or that you provide that relate to, like, you're kind of like exactly what you're selling. Like, for instance, like, if they were to sell stuffed olives or something at the wine and cheese shop, that would make sense because that kind of goes with everything else. Like, you know, we sell supplements because that kind of goes with the exercise program. We also sell clothing because people need to wear clothes. And our clothing is more like graphic tees, things like that. But, like, it kind of still relates to the industry. Like, we wouldn't sell, like, I don't know, doorstops.
Yeah, spatulas.
Yeah, that'd be weird. You know, come in and get you a Williams-Sonoma, like, copper pans in here, you know? That'd be kind of weird.
Yep.
But, yeah, man, that was good.
So, that's it, man. I mean, they're in business today, but it's not the same GM.
Yeah, no, it's totally different. But, because they didn't innovate, we're going to play a half a tap for GM. All right. At the beginning of the show, I said, Jonathan, you're the cheapest man I've ever met. Besides, my wife would call me the cheapest man. She's.
I'd love to hear how this is the case, but.
Like, your electric bill went up like a mere $10. I'll never forget that. You're like, I can't believe it. I'm just like, just pay it. Like, by the way, meanwhile, you have like $9,000 worth of like Amazon packages at your door.
That's then, why like, I'm saying I don't know how I'm cheap. I guess maybe in some respects I could be cheap.
Probably the things that you don't respect, like electricity.
Yes.
And...
I have no respect for electricity.
Things like
it
that.
It should be free.
Exactly. It really should be free. I said I have a few cheap advertising ideas under $50 for your small business. And I'm going to go over a few of them. The first one is that like service apps. Service apps are a way to advertise your idea. If you're a service-based business, perhaps you've heard of service apps like TaskRabbit or Thumbtack. They kind of help you get in contact with customers who need them. Basically, what happens is a customer typically is looking for a service professional. They write a like a ticket almost of what they're looking for, and then a few service pros are able to respond to it.
Yep.
But the great part about it is you just pay for the lead. You don't have to pay for getting the lead, the marketing and stuff like that, because Thumbtack and the other companies have they pay for leads.
Right.
They pay for the marketing, and they put like millions of dollars in marketing. You just focus on trying to get as many of those leads as possible. I'll give you an example of how it can be beneficial, like a service app. I made $150,000 over the course of 3 years through Thumbtack.
Okay.
You know, it's not bad, huh? From one service, one place.
Why not?
Have you used a service app or a professional listing service before?
It's how we started.
Yeah.
We started with Service Magic. Mm-hmm. And then that changed to Home Advisor, and we use a sprinkling of Home Advisor at this point, but not as much as we did then. But yeah, that's literally how we started.
Yeah.
Because like you said, like, what are you going to do? You're going to start pouring money into advertising when you're a nobody?
Yeah.
Or just pay per lead,
right?
You know?
Pay per lead. And that's the thing. Like, you can spend like $50 a month on like leads, like on Thumbtack at the time. And then that $50 can be worth, like in my case, you know, it turned into 150 grand plus. Well, plus now. We're in the plus territory. Business cards. I mean, it's old school, but under 50 bucks, you can get 100 business cards from like Vistaprint or something. And you can pay a small fee maybe to local restaurant and businesses or ask the manager to leave your cards on the counter. Business cards fit nicely on like a bulletin board at a public market or public location. It's hard to figure out the return on investment because oftentimes people now just like snap a picture of their phone. They may not take your card down, but, you know, that's a way to kind of just, again, just putting yourself out there. That's very, very old school. And mark my words, with the amount of money that companies are spending on Facebook and Instagram, and as crowded as the advertising market is getting in social media, these old school methods are getting way more like these guerrilla marketing, like hitting the street and grinding like you used to, are getting way more necessary right now. Facebook, great way to actually market. It's a great way to promote your business or local group. So let's say that you started a Facebook group, you know, for people who have heating or air conditioning problems, where like once a week you were just going there and maybe you had a service tech or something, you know, questions like ask the tech. Right? Like, it's a great way to stimulate and talking in a central location. That seems pretty cool to me. You know, it's a way to get some good targeting. And remember, people who are often in the Facebook group are actively in the Facebook group title is. It could be heating, it could be training, it could be fitness, it could be, you know, it could be nail products, it could be, you know, sprockets for like machines, whatever it is. But starting these Facebook groups kind of generates a conversation around your brand or around a topic too. Have you guys ever used Facebook group?
No.
Email marketing is a great way. We've talked about email marketing before, about how effective it is. Doing email marketing campaigns to your existing list is a great low-cost way to professionally send nice professionally crafted emails. You can track how many people looked at it, how many people viewed it, how many people clicked on it, downloaded. You can even see who unsubscribed. It's a great way to do it. It's one of my favorites. I use email marketing all the time. I just did a campaign for my business email marketing. We did like a 7-day sales cycle. It generated something like 3 people off the list.
Yeah.
Who otherwise wouldn't have come in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, email marketing is fantastic.
Oh, it's awesome. It's so awesome.
If you're not doing that, you gotta get on that ASAP.
Step up your games. Some of us are into businesses that have that require a little more explanation. So webinars are maybe an effective way.
Sure.
Maybe advertising for a webinar for like a service that you're going to be doing that people don't necessarily understand and why it's important for a person to do that. You have low back pain. You know, I'm going to teach you like 5 effective ways to treat your low back pain for free on this webinar. And then you have this webinar, you have 5 ways to treat let's say you're a chiropractor or a physiotherapist. I'm going to show you 5 ways to treat your low back pain. You take people through this webinar series of maybe proven results that you've had working with your patient base or something like that. And then at the end, you basically are like, hey, if you have any questions at all, you can contact me.
Yeah.
Or you can buy my ebook or something like that. They're a great, great way. How many times have you ever, like, I'm sure you're on an email list for consultancy services for HVAC companies, and you get like, oh, like we have this new thing come out, like join our webinar like next Thursday, so you can see what this is all about.
Yep. I learn a lot from them too, you know?
Oh, yeah. If I have the time, I always try to take time and jump on a webinar, you know, for that reason. Yeah, but those are just a few ways that you can reduce your marketing. To $50 or less.
I like that.
Like marketing?
Advertising.
You better not be, man.
Nah, there's so many ways, like you're bringing out, there's so many different ways you can get creative to get really good ROI for not that much money. It might just take more like sweat equity, but you put in the work, you don't have to spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to do. Sometimes that stuff doesn't even work.
Mm.
You know, there's a company out here, a bigger HVAC company out here, they're spending dumb money right now to put advertisements on all the local
billboards.
Like if you drive up 95,
I seen it.
Yeah, if you drive up 95,
I was gonna text you about that, by the way.
Yeah, they're on everything.
I think it's like $7,000 a billboard too.
And they're not just billboards; they're on all the buses and stuff. Like,
yeah,
they've been going hard. But it's like, I don't know, what's the
ROI? They have a huge business.
It's pretty, but it's it's in a few different states also.
Oh, is it a franchise?
I think so.
Okay. So the franchise company is probably paying for that.
Yeah.
And they're like pooling their, oftentimes for franchises, they pool their advertising, like they part of that 5% royalty fee, like maybe 2% goes towards marketing from all the people, and then they all pool their resources, and then they buy national ads that funnel into like a 1-800 number, and then they push those leads out to the individual places.
Hmm, that makes sense. Yeah, so that's kind of, I found that interesting. Because to me, it's like, I don't know, I'd rather put my money in sending somebody, you know, a personalized letter, you know, and saying like, you know, here's a magnet with a personalized letter, you know, anytime you need, you know, need service, you know, whatever, we'll be there for you.
It's a magnet. Hey, have you ever done like a Patriots or a Red Sox?
No, we magnet? Were just trying to do that. Actually, you just reminded me, we should do that for this fall. We want to do like before a heating tune-up one.
Yeah.
And then send like the Patriots season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like so smart.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. People love those. I always get a magnet from the bank, from the credit union, whenever I go, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it, man. A few cheap advertising ideas under $50 for your small business, man. Great show.
Great quick stuff, man. Yeah.
Man, these things are going by quick.
Banging them out. So what are we talking about next week, Micah?
Next week, we're talking about what is a graypreneur.
A graypreneur.
Yes.
I've never heard of that.
Well,
pretty greyhounds.
You may be a graypreneur if you meet certain characteristics. Okay. I think the root word in graypreneur is gray.
Really?
Preneur. Yeah, man. It maybe you've retired by now, and maybe you are starting out this small business thing a little older. It's never too late, man.
I like that. I can't wait to talk about that.
We're going
to
define that next week, what that means and how you can actually be successful.
Yeah, buddy.
But first, before we go on to our next drop another episode, we have to figure out where people can find us on Facebook.
Yes, sir. They can find us at facebook.com/thecommonsensepodcast.
Instagram.
At thecommonsensepodcast.
Twitter.
At sensepodcast.
And
CENTS.
Our show email
is at info@thecommonsensepodcast.com.
And don't forget to subscribe to the Common Sense Show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Music, Player FM. And give us 5 stars.
Please.
If you like what you heard.
Yes.
Helps ranking. Helps people find us. Helps people who are looking for the answers to the small business questions.
Help us help you.
I like that. You know what you are? You're a generous soul. Help us help you. Until next time, use your common sense in your business.
And your business will grow.
But for now,
we're out of here, man.
Peace. So you have this fascination with tents now, huh?
I do. I've been looking up way too much.
You're like looking at reviews right now. You do seem this obsessed with...
You know what it is? I can't stand buying something and then like regretting it afterwards. Like it pisses me off. It's like you put all this effort into it and then it's like, well, this tent sucks. You know, like, or like you're getting like rained on or something, like... Range pouring. Like, I've read some of these reviews, and it's like, oh, this tent looks great.
You can't control the future, Jonathan. Don't even try.
So, that's my dilemma.
Yeah.